And I think we will start. Welcome to Bina, and welcome to the mindfulness series with a Jewish flavor. Great to see everyone. Those who are not regulars, welcome to Bina. Just as a housekeeping announcement, for all those who perhaps here we are. All those who don't get our emails, you might have heard about it from a friend, please tell me afterwards. I'm happy to put you on the email database so you can be up to date with Bina events. Also, at the end of tonight, there's some inserts you have here to give you to put into your folders, bless you, and that you can take with. Overwhelmed by the response, I hope we've been able to make the series a meaningful one and helpful. So we're here to discuss the concept of mindfulness. Mindfulness over the last few decades has gained tremendous traction. More and more people are engaging in with the concept of mindfulness, mindfulness exercises. All right, there's some chairs there, please come in. Back there, if you want. Back there, there.
Sorry,
that's okay, it's okay. Oh, down there, maybe. Yeah. And more and more people are becoming aware of the concepts and the benefits, and I'm trying to maximize the benefits of mindfulness, including even to the point of treating things like anxiety, stress, and even depression. Now, in Judaism, the Jewish concept, the parallel concept of mindfulness, is something we call kavanah. Right? In kavanah, in any given... Kavanah means to have intention. We're going to talk about it a little bit further on down the track. Just to quote something nice from one of the experts on mindfulness today, which is John Kabat-Zinn, and we'll quote from him a little bit more later. He says, in any given moment, we are either practicing mindfulness or the fact that we are practicing mindlessness. In other words, we're either aware and present of what we're doing in the moment, or we're just all over the place. As I said, in Judaism, we call this kavanah, to have intention, to have a focus, and to know where we are. So what we're going to do in this series over the next few weeks is, number one, to explore the concept of mindfulness, to understand what it is, how do we achieve it, how do we connect to it, and also to understand and explore the Jewish view and the Jewish concepts of mindfulness, to see where Judaism is very consistent on the one hand with mindfulness, but then there are some aspects where I think Judaism and Jewish mindfulness probably takes a bit of a different track than conventional mindfulness, and we'll... trying to understand what that all is. So first of all, let's begin just by, in a nutshell, defining and understanding what is mindfulness. Just to get a bit of a view of people, I imagine a lot of people are already aware of some of the concepts. Just to get a bit of a sense from the crowd, what words come to your mind if you talk about mindfulness? What words would you mention in terms of being associated with the concept of mindfulness?
Presence.
Okay.
Non-judgmental.
Awareness, non-judgmental is one of them, of course, which we'll talk about much more next week.
Direction.
Sorry?
Direction,
yeah, all of those, right? So, Dr. John Kabat-Zinn, as I mentioned, he's one of the leading experts today on mindfulness, and his definition is the awareness that emerges through paying attention on purpose. I love that expression, paying attention on purpose, which we don't often do, in the present moment, and non-judgmentally, which we're going to talk about, as I said, next week, to understand exactly what that means, to the unfolding experience moment to moment. Okay. Then there are other definitions. To put it more simply, as it's been put, these are different definitions. Have a look at the bottom one. The process of attending to the present moment experience in a non-judgmental way. Now, I think we need to be aware, of course, and I think we all are aware, that being aware of the moment and the present moment and where we are and who we are and what we're doing, in today's world, in today's society, is particularly difficult. And a number of reasons for that. One of the reasons is because we live in a world today of maximum distraction. Right? Not just maximum distraction when there's so many things happening around us, but we live in a world today where we depend tremendously. We depend on external stimulus. We depend on lots of things. Right? We've all got our laptops, our iPads, our Apple Watches, mini iPads, whatever we have that we sort of feel very, very naked if we lose them or dependent on them and so on. And we're just juggling lots of things. People are very time poor today. People are juggling different priorities, family commitments, business commitments. It's a very fast pace and fast moving world. And it's very, very actually difficult to be aware, to take a step back and to be aware with a real presence in the present moment, in what we're doing now and what we're doing now. It becomes difficult. The other thing is that we're not always comfortable actually being aware. We live in a world today where it's an interesting thing is actually we're not actually comfortable necessarily with ourselves. What I mean by that is that we become so dependent on the outside world, we become so dependent on outside things, on machinery, on technology, on equipment, that actually we've lost the ability, we've lost the comfort even, of actually spending time by ourselves, with ourselves. Now there's an amazing experiment which I heard from Dr. Polkowitz, which was written up in a science journal in the US, of an experiment that was done. They put a bunch of people, did this 11 studies. They put a bunch of people in a room, and the study was that they needed to spend 15 minutes in the room, and there was nothing they could do in the room. The only thing that was available in the room was an appliance attached to the wall in some sort of electrical socket, where if you played with it, you gave yourself a minimal electric shock, which hurt. Amazing thing. Now, he says he's not quite sure how this got through the board of the people that oversee these things, but it did. And the majority of people, particularly men, by the way, sorry guys, but particularly men, through the 15 minutes, found it too difficult to be with themselves and doing nothing, and they started to fiddle with themselves. In other words, they preferred taking something outside of them and engaging with it, giving themselves a shock, rather than actually just spending the 15 minutes by themselves. It's an amazing concept. So, because mindfulness will require an ability to be aware of ourselves. To be aware of the present also means to be aware of what we are doing, to be aware of what we are doing. We'll talk about it later. Breathing is a very critical component of mindfulness. And that takes a lot of skill. It takes a shift, a mindset shift a lot of times, to actually learn that art of just being comfortable with who we are and what we're doing. So in summary, we live in a world of constant noise, distraction, obligations, external stuff, and it takes a real process of training and thinking to become more aware of the present. As I said before, in Jewish literature, we have this concept called kavanah. Now, kavanah plays a very, very important role in Jewish thinking, which is an interesting concept because the Jewish religion, for the most part, is actually a religion of action. So, we have the concept of a mitzvah. So, a mitzvah is an action. So, we light Shabbos candles, or we shake a lulav, or we make kiddush on Friday night, or we put up a mezuzah on the door. And we know that critical to Jewish practice is that the most important thing is the behavior. And you can think about the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, or you can think about kiddush on Friday night, or the holiness of Shabbat. But if you don't actually make the kiddush, or you don't actually light the candles, or put on the tefillin, or put up the mezuzah, you haven't done the mitzvah, and you haven't connected with its intensity and its power. So on the one hand, it's a religion of action. The mind doesn't play that much of a role. Yet we are taught that kavanah is critical. That although ultimately it's about the mitzvah, it's about the action, but we are taught that if someone does a mitzvah without focus, if someone does a mitzvah without kavanah, without intention, then it's like a body without a soul. It's like a dead mitzvah. You've done the mitzvah, but it's lacking the critical meaning, the critical depth. Because that focus on what you're doing, how you're doing, and what it means is so critically important. In fact, the word kavanah in Hebrew also comes from the word lechaven, to direct our minds away from external distractions and into what we are doing at the present moment. We have lots of different laws that breed awareness, or they should breed awareness. In Jewish practice, we know we become very aware of times. Is it sunset? Is it sunrise? When Shabbat starts? When Shabbat ends? Rosh Chodesh, the first day of the month, the moon cycle, all of these things, places, location, things you can do in a synagogue, things you can't do in a synagogue, and so on and so forth. So many, many of the laws are there actually are designed that they should. They don't always do that, but they should breed and they should foster this concept of being aware where we are, when we are, how we are, and lechaven, to direct our thoughts towards what we're doing. Now, before we go on, what I'm going to do is just to give us all a bit of a feel, and I know many of you are probably aware of this already, but I just want to take a few minutes to just watch a little clip. It comes from a CNN 60 Minutes, and it just gives a encapsulates mindfulness in a bit of a nutshell, just to give us a sense of conventional mindfulness and what it does and how they do it, and then we'll move on from there. This has to work, hopefully.
Our lives are filled with distractions. Email, Twitter, texting. We're constantly connected to technology, rarely alone with just our thoughts. Which is probably why there's a growing movement in America to train people to get around the stresses of daily life. It's a practice called mindfulness, and it basically means being aware of your thoughts, physical sensations, and surroundings. Tonight, we'll introduce you to the man who's largely responsible for mindfulness gaining traction. His name is Jon Kabat-Zinn, and he thinks mindfulness is the answer for people who are so overwhelmed by life, they feel they aren't really living at all.
There are a lot of different ways to talk about mindfulness, but what it really means is awareness.
Is it being present?
It is being present. That's exactly what it is.
I don't feel I'm very present in each moment. I feel like every moment I'm either thinking about something that's coming down the road or something that's been in the past.
So ultimately, all this preparing is for what? For the next moment, like the last moment, like, and then we're dead. So, in a certain way, are we going to experience while we're still alive? We're only alive now.
Jon Kabat-Zinn is an MIT-trained scientist who's been practicing mindfulness for 47 years. Back in 1979, he started teaching mindfulness through meditation to people suffering from chronic pain and illness. That program is now used in more than 700 hospitals worldwide.
So how can you be mindful in your daily life?
When your alarm goes off and you jump out of bed, what is the nature of the mind in that moment? Are you already like, oh my God, your calendar pops into your mind and you're driven already? Or can you take a moment and just lie in bed and just feel your body breathing and remember, oh yeah, brand new day and I'm still alive. So I get out of bed with awareness, brush my teeth with awareness. When you're in the shower, next time check and see if you're in the shower.
What do you mean check and see if you're in the shower?
Well, you may not be. You may be in your first meeting at work. You may have 50 people in the shower with you.
Kabat-Zinn says mindfulness takes practice. A lot of people start with a training class to learn how to meditate. He agreed to teach us at a weekend retreat on a remote mountaintop in Northern California. When we arrived, we were told there'd be no television to watch, no internet, not even an alarm clock. The retreat was full of professionals, neuroscientists, business leaders, Silicon Valley executives. Before we began, we all had to surrender our last ties to the outside world.
Put your devices in the basket, you know. I'm contributing my MacBook Air and my iPhone. Happily.
I wasn't exactly happy to give up my phone. I usually check email several times an hour.
So let's take a few minutes and just settle into an erect and dignified posture.
The retreat lasted 3 days, and most of that time was spent just sitting there, silently meditating, with occasional guidance from Kabat-Zinn.
There's no place to go. There's nothing to do. We're just asking you to sit and know that you're sitting.
Knowing that you're sitting may sound simple. Turns out it's not. The mind constantly wanders.
The mind has a life of its own. It goes here and there.
To not get lost in thought, Kabat-Zinn recommended focusing on the sensation of breathing in and out.
Can we actually ride with full awareness on the waves of the breath at the belly, at the nostrils and the chest, and then simply rest here in awareness?
Resting in awareness is one of those phrases used a lot by people who practice mindfulness. But when I tried to do it, it wasn't restful, and I worried I wasn't doing it right. I kept thinking about work. I guess I saw Kabat-Zinn, who's written 10 books on mindfulness and led nearly 100 retreats, describes meditation as a mental workout.
The mind wanders away from the breath, and then you gently and non-judgmentally just bring it back.
So it's okay that the mind drifts away, but you just bring it back.
It's the nature of the mind to drift away. The mind is like the Pacific Ocean. It waves. And mindfulness has been shown to drop underneath the waves. You drop underneath the agitation in the mind into your breath. Deep enough. Calmness. Gentle undulations.
After out.
Okay. We'll leave it there. So you get the gist of what it is, and I think we understand from this that it's not an easy process. It takes a lot of training, it takes a lot of practice. Now, one very, very important concept to understand is this. Mindfulness is being and not doing. These are his words, actually. And what we mean by that is, although people have mindfulness exercises, mindfulness meditations, mindfulness retreats, but it's not about something you do. You know, someone says, I get up and I do exercise. I run on the beach. I eat three times a day, whatever the case is. Mindfulness is not another item to add to your list to do. It's not an activity. It's a state of being. In other words, it's about being mindful throughout the day. In fact, there are times during the day that we do have to multitask. And we do things, many things at once. And we can even multitask mindfully. Right? It's about getting to a state where we become aware and we're present in the moment that we are. In order to do that, we need some intense exercises or reflections or thought processes that we practice it and we learn to become mindful. But mindfulness is not about the retreat, it's not about the exercises, it's not about the meditation, it's about a whole mindset change of how we live life and how we live throughout the day and how we go through our daily routine. Now, what I want to set as a foundation in terms of this is mindfulness with a Jewish perspective, a Jewish flavor. So I want to tell you how we're going to approach every aspect of mindfulness that we talk about over the next 3 weeks. When we talk about mindfulness, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about mindfulness on two levels. In fact, we'll take mindfulness hopefully to a deeper level than it's normally understood and take it to a new dimension. And let me just share with you a concept that goes like this. Bear with me. There's a couple of things fundamental to Jewish thought. One is that we live life of meaning and purpose. In other words, we don't just go through a day meaningless. We don't just enjoy the world. There's nothing wrong with enjoying life. God gave us a world. He designed a world that has many, many things that are sources of pleasure. And that's fine. That's great. We enjoy his world. But we believe that everything that we do, every experience that we interact with should have some meaning, should have some purpose. We're here for a reason. We're here to live a life of values. We're here to make ourselves better people, to grow, to make the world around us a better place. So life experiences have a deeper dimension to them other than just living it. They have a deeper layer of giving it meaning and purpose. Okay, that's the first thing. In order to understand how that works, we have to understand a very fundamental concept, which I'm going to refer back to all the time. And that is the following. Every single thing in the world, every person particularly, but every experience, every concept, everything that we experience in life has two layers. Has what we call a guf and a neshama, a body and a soul. Okay? Let me explain that. The body of anything is what it looks like on the outside. It's the external, superficial experience or concept. Even an idea has a guf and a neshama. An idea has the idea, the way it looks in the purpose, the way it looks on the outside, the external, the superficial concept, what meets the eye, the exterior. And then it's got a neshama, a soul, which is the deeper metaphysical layer behind what meets the eye. It's the meaning, it's the purpose, it's the depth that is more divine, that is more spiritual, that is less tangible, that is more abstract, that is beneath the external layer of what we see. Is this concept clear? Right. Everything. The person, the table, the experience, the food we eat, the breathing that we do, everything has these two layers. Now, when we talk about this interaction between the body and the soul, the third thing to understand is that the body is the temple of the soul. What do I mean by that? There's a Hasidic saying, and it's there on the slide, a small hole in the body is a large hole in the soul, which means taking care and being aware of the body ensures the stronger expression of the soul. What that means is, that the body and soul of everything that exists in this world interact with each other, and the function of the body is critical. The function of the body is to house the soul, and a healthy body gives expression to the soul. So the stronger the body is not something to be ignored. When I talk about superficial, exterior and interior, I'm not talking about ignoring the superficial. The body is an important part of the equation. The body is the means for the soul to express itself. So for example, eating, let's say take something like eating. Eating and enjoying the food is the goof, is the body. The meaning and purpose behind the reason that we eat, or the deeper meaning that we can give to the eating experience, which is not for now to go in depth what that means, but that depth that we can give to that experience is the soul behind the eating. But you have to eat to give expression to the soul. So it's not that you can divide, you can't disconnect the body and the soul. The body is the expression, becomes the facilitator to express the soul. Are we clear? So therefore, when we talk about awareness of anything, we're going to talk about awareness of breathing, we're going to talk about awareness of eating, awareness of walking, talking, whatever the activity that we're involved in. When we talk about the awareness of the now, when we talk about mindfulness and this ability to be mindful and to be completely present in the now, in the present moment, without distractions, disconnecting ourselves from anything else, the past, the future, just being fully present in the now. When we talk about that, we always have to talk about it on two levels. We have to be present in the now, the goof of the now, the body of the now, and present in the soul of the now. It's being aware not only of what we're doing on a superficial level, but it's being aware of what's behind, what's the depth behind that experience. What's the depth behind the now? This will become clearer when we go through the various examples. So, let's address two mindfulness concepts, which we'll do today. One mindfulness concept that's talked about a lot is this concept called the beginner's mind. Okay. Beginner's mind is a very big concept in mindfulness. It teaches us that when we become aware of the present moment, when we live in the now, and living in the now means that we shut out things from the past, the baggage from the past, and the worries of the future, we disconnect ourselves from the external distractions around the now, and we fully live in the now, we are able to achieve what we call the beginner's mind. In other words, this moment becomes a new and fresh beginning, and we have what's called the freshness of the moment. In the words of Dr. Kabat-Zinn, in the beginner's mind there are many possibilities, but in the experts there are few. In other words, when you give a moment freshness, when a moment becomes a new moment, the opportunities are endless. When we don't have baggage from the past or even worries of the future or distractions of the future, we're not worrying about the meetings that are to come and the things we have to do and the people we have to pick up and the stresses of the deadlines that we have to meet or all the conflicts that we have to resolve, but we live completely in what I'm doing now in the present moment. We give that moment freshness, it becomes a beginner's moment, it's the beginner's mind, and that beginner's mind, the freshness of the moment, gives us a whole different dimension of opportunity. That's a very, very important and critical concept in the mindfulness training. Appreciating that and understanding that and achieving that. In other words, not just being aware of what we're doing, but giving it a freshness, understanding the opportunity of the freshness of the moment. But here too, we have this concept of guf and neshama. We have that on a superficial level, and then we need to understand that on a whole new deeper level. And let me share with you a Kabbalistic concept. The freshness of the moment, when we talk about it in a Jewish context, is this. There's a phrase that we say in tefillah, there's a phrase that we mention in davening. In fact, it's in the morning prayers every single day. That God renews the creation every single day. What does that mean? So the Kabbalists teach us that we have a tradition in Jewish thought, of course, that from Genesis, that God created the world in 6 days. He created the world with 10 utterances. He said, let there be the heaven and there was the heaven. Let there be trees and there were trees and so on and so forth. So he used what we call the Asara Ma'amarot, the 10 utterances, as tools to create the world. So what keeps the heaven going, what makes the heavens exist is that instruction of God, that energy, that infusion of divine energy that God put into the heaven to make it exist. The same with the trees, the same with the oceans, the same with the dry land, and so on and so forth. But the mystics explain that fundamental to Jewish thinking is that it's not that God created the world to exist and that let it run as a self-sufficient, independent existence. But in fact, for reasons that we don't have time really to go into in great depth, but the concept is, when God created the world, He actually needs to recreate the world every single second. So it's not that the creation took place in 6 days, it's the creation energy, the utterances, the tools that God's used to put into every single part of the creation to create the world is something He constantly does. So what happens, therefore, if we understand this, it takes the beginner's mind and the freshness of the moment to a whole new level. Because what that means is, it's not just a matter of this moment being fresh. In other words, it's not a humanly, artificially created beginner's mind, freshness of the moment. It's not that I really want to be able to function properly in this moment, so I'm going to work on myself to shut out the past, to move away from the distractions of the future, of the days ahead, or the minutes ahead, or the hours ahead. But in fact, if we think about it and reflect, the power behind the beginner's mind, the power behind the freshness of this present moment, is a deep concept. It's a divinely inspired idea. Because this moment is actually a renewed creation. It's a fresh creation. It's a pure creation. You know, sometimes we look at the world around us and it looks more like a jungle than it does like a world. Especially nowadays. You open up a newspaper, you look at the headlines. It's not always good news. You know, the ones that some research studies in America that people who wake up with radio alarm clocks have bad days. Because normally what happens is when you have a radio alarm clock, you wake up to the news. The news is normally not good news because people don't sell newspapers or ads on radio stations with good news. It's normally bad news. And we don't have a shortage of bad news today. So it's a kind of a thing where you look around the world and it's like a terrible, is this a world we can really function in? Is there purity to the world? Is there freshness to the world? Mindfulness tells us that we need to look at each moment as a fresh moment. But how do we do that? It's such a complicated world. There's so much baggage, individually, communally, collectively, globally. How do we create that freshness of every moment? But on a deeper level, we understand that every moment indeed has a freshness to it. Of course, all the moments are connected and there is a link between the present, the past and the future, which we're going to deal with next week at greater length to understand how that all fits into the mindfulness process. But it is a reality and it is a truth that because God infuses the world every single moment with a new divine energy, what that actually means is that it's not an old world. When we understand this idea, we appreciate this idea, and we internalize and reflect on this idea, becomes an amazing power. In other words, every moment has an infinite divine infusion of freshness, of newness, of opportunity that we didn't have before. And when we reflect on how actually do we disconnect from the past and from the future and shut ourselves out from all the distractions and live in only the moment that we're in and be fully aware of the present, understanding this deep idea makes it that much easier to understand that every moment indeed is a beginner's moment. Every moment indeed is a completely new, fresh moment. So I wanted to bring that in because that is a fundamental concept in mindfulness, this concept of the beginner's mind, which from a Jewish point of view so fits in and is so true. Because it's not only true in terms of designing it that way artificially, but it's true in essence. It's true that every moment indeed has that purity and has that new opportunity that is completely independent of what happened yesterday. I might have messed up completely yesterday. I might have messed up. The world might have messed up. There might be so much chaos, so much trouble, so much tension, so much conflict maybe. But nevertheless, it's all nothing. It's not nothing. We need to deal with it, but it doesn't take away in any way. It doesn't detract in any way from the fresh opportunity that lies in this present moment. And that's fundamental and critically connected to the whole process of understanding and achieving the mindset of mindfulness. Okay, now, what I want to do is, I want to focus on a critical mindfulness concept and work it through, and then we're going to end with a mindfulness exercise that I'm going to share with you to do at home. We're not going to do it here, but... And that's the concept of breathing. In all mindfulness literature, you will find, and whenever you read stuff on mindfulness, you will find mindfulness exercises to do with breathing. Am I following this properly? I think so, right? Yeah. Okay. Now, why is breathing so critical to the concept of mindfulness? Because there's a number of reasons. Just on a very simple level, why breathing is such an integral part of the mindfulness training. Firstly, on a very simple level, if we talk about becoming aware of ourselves, see, to be present in the now, you have to be fully aware of where you are symbolically, where you are physically, where you are on all levels, and you have to be aware of what you're doing, right? Otherwise, you can't possibly be present in the now if you're not even aware of how you're functioning. So being aware of yourself and being aware of the present go hand in hand. So if a person needs to be aware of themselves and aware of the present, and you want to become in tune and aware of your essence, your existence, then breathing is going to be the place to start. Why? Because if there's one thing that would express the essence of the person, the essence of our existence, something we do all the time and we cannot exist without, it's breathing. Okay, that's a simple idea. I mean, we can't exist without food, but food we don't do all the time. Or at least, most of the time, we don't do it all the time. Some people would like to do that, but we don't do it all the time, right? So that's number one. Second thing is that breathing is the one thing that we absolutely critically need for our existence, and yet we don't normally, unless we have something wrong with us, we don't have to do anything for it. It's a default thing, we automatically breathe. Okay. Food is critical to our existence, but you have to go and take the food, you have to make the food, you have to buy the food. Clothing, shelter, all of these things you have to actually access. Breathing you don't, breathing is just there, we just do it all the time. If we're not doing it all the time, we have a medical problem, right? But yet at the same time, breathing is not something we do, so breathing becomes like the state of being. In other words, breathing is not something we do, breathing is us. Breathing represents us, who we are. It's a state of our being. It's also, by the way, the cause of why we're not aware of it. And if you think about it, most of us are not actually aware of the fact that we breathe all the time. We're not conscious of it. Only when it's negative, only when we have a bad cold or, God forbid, an asthma attack, then we suddenly become very aware of our breathing. But otherwise, we're not. We keep breathing. We're actually not aware of it. In fact, we'll soon talk about it. Most of us don't even breathe properly because we're not conscious of it and we don't put any effort into it. Okay. So therefore, that's the second concept. So number one, it's something we do all the time. We cannot exist without it. Second of all, it's not something we do. It's something we are. It's the closest to what we are. It's something that happens, but it's the closest to what we are because we're just doing it all the time, automatically, with automaticity. The second thing is that the way we breathe, okay, what I'm sharing with you just is regular mindfulness concepts. The way we breathe encapsulates the essence of mindfulness. And the reason for that is as follows. You see, when we breathe, we don't just breathe one continuous way. There's inhaling and exhaling, right? So in other words, it's not one long experience, it's a continuous flow of distinct moments. Okay. And the way that happens is, when we breathe, what we do is we take in air, we inhale through our nostrils, we inhale what we need to inhale, and then we exhale the toxicity, we exhale the waste, the stuff we don't need, we get rid of it, and we start again. So it's a continuous thing, but it's a continuous flow of distinct moments, which is very, very much in sync with the concept we just spoke about of the freshness of every moment, the beginner's mind. The concept of viewing every moment as something completely independent and something new. Because when I finish breathing, I get rid of the stuff I don't want to and I start with a new breath, a new fresh thing. Okay. So therefore, those three reasons, the fact that we do it, that we absolutely need it, it's critical for our existence, the fact that we don't have to do it, it's sort of just who we are, the fact that it's distinct moments, every moment is a fresh moment, that all explains why in the mindfulness training and the mindfulness literature, there's such a tremendous emphasis on the concept of breathing. Which is why any mindfulness book or journal or audio CD or whatever will start with exercises to do with breathing. For a person to be able to sit down, divorce themselves from any other distractions, and become aware of their own breathing. Becoming aware of the rhythm of how they breathe. Becoming aware of how to breathe. We actually don't breathe properly most of the time. It's about taking in deep breaths, holding it there for a moment, then exhaling slowly. All of those exercises are all part of the mindfulness training, and it creates a very strong awareness of self an awareness of who we are, an awareness of where we are and what we're doing, at the very core of who we are, starting with how we actually breathe. So that's the body of breathing. That's what we call the guf of breathing. Okay, guf meaning the body. That's breathing on a superficial level. But I want to do with what I want to share with you now is taking breathing to a whole new level, and then show you an exercise to be able to achieve that. The soul of breathing, the neshama. In Hebrew, breathing is called neshima. Soul is neshama. Get that? Which means that when we breathe, our breath, breathing, is intricately connected with the expression of our soul. Our soul is expressed through our breathing. Okay? In Genesis, when the human being was created, Adam was created, the verse tells us the following. Vayipach be'apav nishmat chayim. And God blew into his nostrils a soul of life. Right? You see the connection to breathing already. He blew into his nostrils the soul of life. What is that soul? What is the soul that we have? What is the neshama that we have that is expressed in the neshima? The soul that is expressed in our breath. The soul is an energy of pure, pristine, a pure, pristine, divine spark. That's what our soul is. Our soul is, if we can say a thing like that, it's a piece of the divine almost. It's a piece of divinity. Right? Now, we've explained it in other courses that the soul has many layers. The soul motivates action, it motivates emotion, it drives intellect, it's subconscious, all these different very, very layers of the soul, various layers of the soul. But the soul at its essence, the core of the soul that we call it, the very foundation of the soul is a spark of purity. It's a spark of divine energy. That's what the soul is. And we all have that. We all have at our very, very essence that purity, that pristine spark of divine energy. Every time we take a breath, every time we breathe, it's the breath that gives us the freshness of each moment. It's a distinct breath. It's a breath that is different from the breath before. We've got rid of the toxicity of the breath before. We're now starting again. We now have a new moment. Every time we breathe, the soul is expressed through our breath. Every time we breathe, the neshama comes through the neshima. Every time we breathe, it's the soul that is driving and giving us the ability to breathe, to be alive, and to give the moment freshness. To give the moment a complete attention, complete focus, to the exclusion of any other distraction, any other baggage, any other worry, any other problem, to be fully involved in this moment and to maximize the potential that this moment gives us. Now, why is this so important? Why is this concept so important? In other words, what do I gain mindfulness in a mindfulness concept context? What do I gain by understanding that the breath is not just a breath, but that the breath is an expression of my soul? What do I gain from that from a mindfulness point of view? So let me share with you an amazing idea. We gain three things. And this is critical to the whole Jewish perspective on mindfulness. So if I'm just aware of the body of breathing, if I'm just aware of my breath, which is a great achievement in itself, so I'm aware of each moment, I'm aware of the moment that comes before the next moment, and I can be present in this particular moment and hopefully maximize the potential of it. But if I understand that my breath that I breathe is an expression of my soul, that what's behind the breath is actually the neshama, the soul that is being expressed through the breath. The breath is the temple of the soul, so to speak. Then there's a couple of things that happen. First of all, it gives me a whole new perspective on how to give this moment freshness. You see, as human beings, we are human beings, we're not angels, we're not perfect. As human beings, we fail. As human beings, we mess up. And it's such a difficult thing not to bring the past into the present. and not to bring the future into the present. How many times have you had a conflict with someone and you walk around for the next 6 days thinking about the conversation? And you can't function because everything you do is now being done and achieved and experienced through the prism of that conversation. I see some heads nodding and others are too embarrassed to agree. No, I'm just kidding. Right? How many times do we have a deadline to think or something we have to achieve? How many times do we scream at our children and then go walk around guilty for the next 3 days thinking I'm a bad parent? Or we walked into Coles and our kid threw a tantrum and we think, oh gosh. We keep on making mistakes. That's what human being is. Why is that so difficult? Why do we carry the baggage with us so much? Why do we do that? One of the reasons that we do that is because we tend to define ourselves by our successes and our failures. So if I messed up this morning, I'm a failed person and I walk around with that identity for the rest of the day or for the rest of the week or some months maybe. If I really succeeded today, I walk on, you know, I'm on a high. One of the things that our consciousness of the soul teaches us is that we are not defined by our failings. Why? Because the essence of the soul that we have and we possess at its very core is a pure spark of divine energy that can never be damaged. It's the core of our essence, the core of who we are. And at the very core of our existence, we remain pure. We remain good. We remain someone who is not defined by that failing. What is the core of our identity is the core of our soul. A very, very important concept. That doesn't mean I don't take responsibility for my mistakes. Yes. It doesn't mean I don't celebrate my successes and I don't nurture them and I don't learn from past and take into account the future. And like, as I said, we'll talk about this a lot next week. But I'm not defined by it. When I'm not defined by my failings, if I can walk away from a mistake, if I can walk away from a failed experience, understanding, yes, I messed up, yes, I made a mistake, yes, something painful happened, yes, something tragic happened even, or something very difficult happened, or something complicated happened, but it doesn't in any way define me, because what defines me is the purity of my soul, the core essence of who I am, then when I'm aware of my next breath, and I'm aware that the breath is an expression of my soul, and it's my soul that's infusing the breath with energy, it's my soul that's giving me life, and what is that soul? That soul is an infusion of absolute purity. Which means notwithstanding what might have happened until this moment is a complete, not only a complete standalone, but it's a complete standalone of absolute purity and therefore pure and fresh opportunity. That's the depth of being aware of our breath and understanding the freshness of the moment through becoming aware of each breath as we take it. Number one. Number two, when I become aware of my breathing and I become aware of each breath that I take, which is something by default we often not aware of, and then I understand the deeper layer that the breath that I take is really the essence, it's the expression of the soul, what actually happens is I understand the ability to give the present moment meaning and purpose. In other words, because as we said before, fundamental to our belief is that every experience that we have has to have some depth, has to have some meaning and purpose. Where does that meaning and purpose come from? Where does the values come from? So if I'm just aware of my breathing on a physical level, if I'm just aware of my breathing on a body level, then I'm aware of the present, I become aware of the present. And therefore I become aware of the present experience. I become aware of what I'm doing. By extension, when I become aware of my breathing, I learn to become aware of the present. So I become aware of my talking, my walking, my eating, and so on and so forth. But that does, so that's good because it gives me fulfillment, it gives me better quality of life to be aware in the moment. But it doesn't necessarily give me inner fulfillment. It doesn't necessarily give me an opportunity to give that moment and that experience depth, meaning, values, purpose. But when I become aware that each breath is actually an expression, it's not just a breath, it's only a breath on the superficial level, but it's a breath which is an expression of the soul, then what that does is, it gives me the ability to put the soul into what I'm doing. To put the soul into the present. And to give the present a deeper level of meaning, a deeper level of purpose. To be able to think about the present moment as a fresh beginning, as a beginner's mind, but also to give it values, to apply my values to the present moment. To live now in a fresh way, by the values that I hold important, that I hold, that I understand and appreciate, will give meaning and purpose to my life experiences. Are we good? And finally, and this is a very, very important concept, but let me just give you an introduction. The most unique part of every human being, and some of you have heard me before, hear me say this many times in different settings. The most important part of every human being is the ability to grow. Growth. What does growth mean? Growth means to challenge our comfort zone. Growth means to go out of who we are. Growth means to go beyond ourselves. To change, to grow, to improve, to fix. That's what a human being is. That concept, the mystics explained to us, is a very godly concept. Why is that? You see, normally the difference between, you know, in mysticism we have this concept of the creator and the created, God and the world. Bore and Nivra, we call that in Hebrew. The definition generally of a creation is that it has a definition. In other words, every creation that God created has, it's finite. It has a definition, it has a personality, it has properties, and that's what it is. A fish can't become a sheep can't become something else. Every creation is created the way it is. The definition of God is that He has no definition. Right? That's the definition of God, the Creator. The definition of God is that He's undefined. He's omnipresent, He's omnipotent, He can be whatever He wants, He can choose not to do, He can choose to do. He's infinite, He's truly infinite. There's one creation that God created that He infused with a godly spark of infinity, and that's the human being. Many of you have heard me say this before, but angels, which are holy beings, but you know that angels cannot change. That's why in the prayers we refer to angels as holy animals, because animals cannot change. An animal cannot actually make a conscious decision to grow and to improve and to go beyond its comfort zone. An animal is instinctive, it's locked into its personality. Down here in this world, the animals are very animalistic. In the higher worlds, the angels are holy animals, they're much more spiritual, but they still have a personality which they are locked into and they cannot change. There's only one thing that could change, that's the human being. Because the human being has a soul, a divine soul, a godly soul. And we have within us a spark of the infinite, which allows us to be infinite. What does it mean to be infinite? We're not infinite, we still finite human beings. What does it mean to be infinite? To be infinite means to go beyond our finiteness, to do more than we can, to challenge our comfort zone, to be better tomorrow than we are today, to take a step forward beyond who we are tomorrow, next month, next week, better than we were till now. That's the ability of the human being, growth. Now, where does that come from? It comes from the soul. So now let's bring this all together in mindfulness. When we talk about being present of the moment, when we talk about being present in the moment, we talk about the beginner's mind, we talk about... Sorry, I was going to show you these things, but anyway, I'll give it to you afterwards. When we talk about maximizing the potential of every moment because we're fully there, we're fully present. Okay? Let's just revise. That's the essence of mindfulness, to be aware and fully present in the now. To be fully present in the now means that I can draw from the now maximum opportunity. I can live the now to its fullest. Okay? Step one of the learning to do that is becoming aware of myself. Becoming aware of myself, the first step is becoming aware of my breathing. But when we understand that awareness of breathing comes together with the consciousness of what is behind the breathing, the soul being expressed in the breathing, then the now takes on a whole deeper level, a whole new dimension. The now becomes a now, which is a now of meaning and purpose. It becomes a now which is truly new. It's truly pure. It's not defined by any mistakes or any baggage from the past or the future. And finally, the now becomes an infinite now. That's the difference. In other words, the now is not just a now that I can live to the fullest and I can maximize its opportunity, but the now becomes a present moment of infinite opportunity. an opportunity where I can take a quantum leap. I can be radically different than I was the moment before. The now where I can access and reach something completely fresh, something completely new, something that is out of me, it's out of my comfort zone, something that I want to now embrace, which is completely different and perhaps beyond my normal personality. But that's the opportunity of the now. Every now, every moment gives us that opportunity to grow, to be infinite. Why? Because the breath of the now, the breath which, the rhythmic breath which represents the present moment, is an expression of the soul which has in it a spark of the infinite divine. And that's why it's not just the moment that we're living, it's the opportunity of the moment, and it's the infinite opportunity of the moment. And it's understanding that every moment, notwithstanding what might have happened till now, what will happen in the future, but the now possesses opportunities, but amazing opportunities, infinite opportunities. Opportunities that might be completely and radically different than before, but that's the power of the human being, to use the power of the soul to take that jump and to put myself in a now, in a completely different space, in an infinite space than I was before. So how do we do this? So I'm going to end off with a mindfulness, both nishima and neshama exercise that I'm going to share with you. And it's based on a formula which I call the Modeh Ani formula. Now, Modeh Ani is a sentence that is at the very beginning of the prayer book. I'm going to show you this on the screen, on the screen. At the end, when you go, if you can please take, here we have the PowerPoint slides, and also I'm going to give you this exercise all written out so you can put it into your folders and practice it. But I'm going to recommend, what I'm going to share with you now is not just an exercise. It's an exercise which you should try. Because mindfulness requires a lot of thinking and requires a lot of practice. Now, there's a prayer that's right in the beginning of the prayer book. It's called Modeh Ani, and it's commonly known as the prayer of gratitude. It's basically thanking God for being alive in the morning. But it's a very, very deep sentence, and often it's not understood. The sentence is broken up into different phrases, and it's a very, very powerful sentence. And I'm going to share with you how you do it as an exercise. Now, the sentence reads, just to give you a bit of just an overview, Modeh Ani lefanecha melech chai v'kayam shechazarta b'nishmati b'chemla rabba manatecha, which means, I thankfully acknowledge you, living and eternal King, referring to God, for you have compassionately restored my soul within me. Great is your faithfulness. That's what it says. Now, let's break it down. But we break it down as an exercise. But before we do that, let's understand how we wake up in the morning and why we do this in the morning. The first thing to wake up in the morning is, in fact, this is actually written in the code of Jewish law, that we're actually not permitted to wake up and jump out of bed right away. In fact, I once heard from a doctor, it's actually medically problematic. But besides that, it's not good for your blood pressure, apparently. But it's right. It's not the greatest image that I found. But anyway, but so the first thing is we wake up is to remain still. In other words, when we wake up in the morning, to ensure that our mind is not racing to the million things we have to do today, but just to wake up, remain still, and realize that we've woken up, and be aware and conscious of the fact that we're alive, thankfully alive, to experience another day. That's step one. Step two is to actually sit up. This exercise is supposed to be done sitting. So you wake up, you wait a few minutes, and then you sit up, and you sit up again without racing into the whole day. Don't check your iPhone, because that just won't work. In fact, don't even put it next to your bed. Leave it in a different room. And then breathe. But breathe properly. Before you start the Modeh Ani, breathe properly. In other words, wake up in the morning to understand that we're breathing, to be aware of our breathing, which is part of the mindfulness training, to breathe properly. Breathe properly means to take deep breaths, slowly, hold it there, breathe out. Do it within a rhythm and to become aware and conscious of the rhythm of our breathing, the distinct moments, the freshness of every moment, the power of every breath. Right? That's how you start off. And then the concept is to increase that awareness and to deepen the awareness by understanding what's behind that breathing and to actually say the prayer of Modeh Ani with the following reflections. Now, just to highlight something before we start this, that the reason this is done in the morning is that we are taught that the very first part of the morning is like a moment of infancy. It's a moment of purity. Because traditionally the Talmud tells us when we sleep at night, our soul part of our soul at least goes back to heaven and is refreshed. So when the soul comes back in the morning, it comes back even a fresher soul than it was yesterday. It's a real freshness. Right? Problem is our body when we wake up is a bit dull. It takes us time to wake up. Some people take some longer, but it takes time. But the soul is ready to go. So that's why we need to seize the opportunity of that moment to catch that purity and to understand and to reflect that in essence every moment throughout the day is going to be that moment of freshness, that moment of purity. And then the sentence goes like this. The way to do this exercise is to actually say the sentence, try it once a week, try it a few times a week, try it every day. But you can say it every day quickly, but try, say it and think about, reflect on these concepts. So the first part, okay, so that's the four steps. First part is to say Mode Ani, I thankfully acknowledge. In other words, we start the day with gratitude. We're aware that we're alive, it's an awareness concept. To be aware that I'm breathing, I'm living, and to be thankful for it, acknowledging that in fact it's a gift. Okay, that's the phrase Mode Ani. Then comes Lefanecha. Lefanecha is an important one because it goes to the essence of what we've been discussing. Lefanecha means I am alive, but we say to God, I'm alive before you, which means I acknowledge that I'm not alone. I don't operate alone. The freshness of every moment, the opportunity of the now, is an opportunity that comes with the support of the infinite God, the infinite opportunity. It's the divine, it's that purity that is behind my being alive that gives me the opportunity to understand the moment and awareness of consciously breathing and being alive. So I understand that I have a soul expressed in my breathing, which means I'm part of a much greater reality. I'm part of God's reality, which is a much more infinite reality. Then we say, Melech Chai V'Kayam. We acknowledge that God is the living and eternal King. He's in control. He has infinity. He's omnipresent. He's omnipotent. And that's what He gives us the ability to do as well. And the formula then to focus on and continue, Shehechazarta Bi Nishmati. We say, you have returned my soul. In other words, I was breathing, I'm aware that I'm alive, but I now acknowledge and I'm aware that my breathing is an expression of my soul. I'm becoming more aware of the deeper layer of the breathing, the soul that is behind the breathing, the soul that is being expressed through every breath. Then we say an important phrase, b'chemla. Chemla means with compassion. We acknowledge that it's a gift, the gift of freshness that we get every single day. That it's a new day, it's a new opportunity, it's a fresh start. No matter what happened yesterday, today's a fresh start. That neshama, that soul that's giving me that freshness is indeed a gift. And then we end off with an amazing phrase. A puzzling phrase, but it's an amazing phrase. And the phrase says, Rabba emunatecha, great is your faithfulness. And the commentaries ask, what's that doing there? What do you mean great is your faithfulness? Why are we now talking about faith in God? But in fact, many commentaries explain that it actually doesn't mean that. It's not talking about our faithfulness in God, it's talking about God's faith in us. That one of the things we acknowledge when we become aware of being alive and we become aware of the soul which is behind our breath and the opportunity and the infusion of divine energy, purity that that soul gives us, we also understand that because of that, God believes in us. That's an amazing way to start a day. We start a day by acknowledging and reflecting on the fact that God has faith in us to be present in every moment, to maximize every moment, to use every moment which He has given us as a beginner's mind, and completely fresh, completely pure, and to maximize the opportunity of that day. So that's the formula. Now, I said it quickly because time is running out, but it's not supposed to be done that way. Okay. The idea is to actually say this slowly, and to think about each phrase, to learn the reflection, to learn the ideas behind each phrase, and to think about them, to become aware of them. But we do it as we wake up. Again, we sit still, we sit up still, we breathe first of all, just to be aware of where we are, aware of our breath. Do it in a rhythm, do it deep, exhale it, and then say the Mode Ani, thinking about each phrase, internalizing the soul that's being expressed in the breath, and becoming aware of the infinite opportunity of every single moment. Now, next week, we're going to talk about a very critical concept, and that is that it's all very good talking about the freshness of every moment, but it is very difficult to let go. It's let go of the previous moments and the future moments. And we're going to talk about the relationship between the present, the past, and the future, and how we actually learn to do that, to be fully present in the moment by letting go of everything else outside of this moment. So I hope that's been a good start. When you go to that, there's two things to take here if you want to put into your folder. These are the slides, and this is the Modeani exercise that we just went through for you to take home and to actually put into practice if you can. Thank you for coming and listening, and have a great evening.
Thanks.
Welcome. So good to meet you. Did you see Fire?
Yes, I'm looking forward to it. Thank you very much. It's great seeing you. All the best.
Fantastic.
Sure, sure.
I've sort of learned, and what I do, I try at least sometimes, is to say the Modeani
Where it says actually in Shulchan Aruch is that there's a process that we first think about it. You think about who you're saying, who you're going to, like, think about the fact that you're alive, you think about it, God gave us in the day, and then you say. That's why it says you should say sitting up, in the bed, but sitting up.
Okay, all right. Thanks, Rabbi.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi.
You're welcome.
We're going to go over that.